Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
Welcome into another episode of Big Time Baseball. I'm your host, Tony Gwynn Jr., alongside my partner, John Heyman. And John, it's been a long time, man. We haven't done this together in a bit.
I know. It's great to be back with you, Tony.
Had some pretty sweet things happen this past week. Let's start with Miguel Cabrera reaching 3,000 hits. He becomes the 33rd player in baseball history to reach the mark. This is one of the best right-handed hitters I've had a chance to play against. And I feel like I've said that the last couple of years, one being Albert Pujols, the other being Miguel Cabrera, and it fits. It really fits a lot. So I just want to get your thoughts on how you feel about Miguel Cabrera reaching this milestone.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I love the guy. Terrific individual, incredible hitter, just a hitting savant. I'm with you, one of the greatest right-handers of all time. And not only 3,000 hits, to do that with 500 home runs, that is not easy. I mean, only seven players now have done that. So 33 got to 3,000 hits, which is an amazing accomplishment. And I'm not sure when we're going to see that again, looking at the totals. And we have a lot of great young players playing, but it just shows you how difficult 3,000 hits is. I'm just not sure. I mean, looking at Mike Trout, he's like halfway there. You know, is he really going to get another 1,500 hits? It ain't easy. But to do that with 500 home runs, to me, that's just icing on the cake. Just an amazing, amazing player. And congratulations to Miguel Cabrera, one of my favorites.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. He's always been one of my favorite to watch. He's one of the few guys that, along with Albert Pujols from the right-handed side, that – could use the whole entire baseball field from line to line. He could hit, and he had power from line to line. The other thing, he's in a group of three guys that have had 3,000 hits, 500 home runs, and all did it while maintaining a career average above 300. The other two guys, Hank Aaron and Willie Mays. I mean, when you're in an elite group like that, there really isn't an argument for you not being amongst the very, very best to ever play this game.
Absolutely. I mean, he should be unanimous. We have had one player unanimous, and that was a relief pitcher, which was interesting, Mariano Rivera. But, you know, I mean, I voted for him. Obviously, he's well-deserving, the greatest reliever of all time, not knocking it. I'm glad he's unanimous. But there's one in every crowd, almost every crowd. Obviously, Griffey didn't get three votes. Jeter didn't get one vote, but I hope we've weeded out that one or two in every crowd. You know, obviously Miguel Cabrera is an all-time great. An all-time great should go in right away and as a unanimous pick.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's hard. I think people forget this guy was an athlete when he first came up to the big leagues. I remember his first home run. He went dead center for a walk off homer, but he could play some third base. And you know, obviously, as he's gotten older, he's gotten a little bigger. Third base wasn't necessarily in the cards, but again, this is one of the greatest hitters, greatest players of all time to ever grace the field. The other thing that popped up last night, and this is usually pops up once a year, we see an explosion like this, but Kyle Schwarber had just had enough in his last at bat of the game. Yeah. Angel Hernandez behind the plate had rung him up on some bad calls in the previous ABs. And he absolutely lost it. It's one of the best explosions on an umpire that I think we've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, I love the hand gestures. I don't break. I'm watching it right now as we're talking about it. They're showing it again on MLB Network. Fantastic. Schwarber, great job. Love it. You know, that call was clearly wrong, but it wasn't as bad as the one to Segura. 6 inches, which I think, 6 inches inside that. That was 6.47 to be exact. I think that was the worst call of the year. And I think on Twitter I saw he was 85% correct on ball strikes. Ooh. That's not good. In fact, that's the worst of the year. I don't know that it's the worst of all time. Some are worse, but you know, you mentioned as we talked earlier is that he's inconsistent. You know, I mean, we hadn't noticed him yet this year, and now all of a sudden, with that brutal effort, you know, he's back in the news. Angel Hernandez is, and you know, he is capable of having good games here and there. You know, but I mean, this was bad, and I know I got a huge Twitter reaction. You know, there's a lot of things you tweet on Twitter are just ignored, but I tweeted sources: Angel Hernandez misses the E on eye charts. I never gotten a bigger reaction. I'm following it minute by minute. I have now 22,000 likes. 22,000 likes. I think when I tweeted that Gerrit Cole was going to the Yankees, I only got 14,000 likes. So it's bad that I keep track, but I mean, people do not appreciate his umpiring.
That is funny. I know funny. That's funny,
thank
John.
You.
That's a good one. Angel certainly didn't have a good night and has a tendency. And listen, in baseball in general, this is not just Angel. Like, when an umpire is having a bad day, and his bad day is not necessarily a few calls, but or even calling a specific pitch consistently, it's the inconsistency that drives players nuts, and it makes the game harder, both for the pitcher and the hitter, because if they don't know what the zone is, they're basically like they're trying to figure out how to get strikes, and if an umpire is inconsistent, as Angel was last night, it could lead to an episode like that. All right, let's jump in to the standings in the different divisions around the league. We'll start with the AL East. Let's start with your Yankees. Yankees and Blue Jays, they're both 10-6, tied atop the first in the American League East. And I think the Yankees are playing some good baseball along with the Blue Jays, although Yankees had a little episode a couple days ago with their fan base just completely I don't know what had gotten into them, but they decided after the walk-off win that they were going to throw trash at the players. This was after another incident in which the Twins left fielder ran into the wall, seemed to be a little bit shaken up. Their center fielder, Straw, took some issue with it and had some words, some close-up words. He climbed a fence to get his words off, and then that preceded the trash being thrown as – the Yankees walked off that win. Thankfully, you had some class and Stanton and Judge going out to try to calm that fan base down. But listen, I know the Yankee fans are passionate and have been raucous for a while, but this one kind of crossed the line a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, passion is one thing. That was just bad. That was not good at all. Give Miles Straw credit. I don't blame him for climbing the fence to confront the fans. Defending his teammate. I mean, Kwan ran into the fence. He could have been hurt seriously.
Yeah, almost
head first. I'm sure he was in pain at the very least. And it's not that wasn't good to be mocking him after he running into the fence and then throwing the garbage. That's just, I mean, not good either. And I don't blame Straw for saying that they're the worst fans. You know, I mean, I will say this, though. I went with my wife to an Eagles game, and my wife is from Milwaukee, and it was an early round game, and she's a Packers fan and wore a cheese head, and we had end zone seats for an Eagles game in Philadelphia. You know, those fans were pretty tough, too. Nobody threw garbage at us, but I would advise, if anyone's listening, do not wear a cheese head to an Eagles game. They do not appreciate it. And by the way, the Packers won the game and ended up winning the Super Bowl that year. So the Eagles won it since then. So, good for them. But, the Yankee fans, they should be ashamed. The ones who did it. Now, not all the Yankee fans are like that. Some of them are passionate, as you said. But the ones who threw garbage or mocked a player who was injured or at least in pain, terrible. So I'm with Miles.
I tell you what, I know your wife is tough. The mere fact that she wore the cheese head in Philadelphia.
Well, yeah, I don't think she knew. She didn't know.
It was
a lack of knowledge, I think, more than anything.
All right, let's talk about the actual game, the actual teams on the field. Blue Jays have looked terrific. This young team looks like they're ready to take that next step. You know, they've been they've been a team full of potential over the last couple of years. These young guys seem like they're ready to go. It seems like Bichette is a clear leader on that team, along with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. They seem to be ready to make a next step. And listen, the Yankees, I've always felt like they were talented enough. The question is, can they stay healthy over the course of the season?
Yeah, I mean, the Blue Jays, to me, should win that division. I saw some predictions where they had the same number of wins as the other three really good teams in that division. I don't see it. They were one game out last year. They brought in Gausman. They brought in Kikuchi. They brought in Chapman. Plus, as you say, and I think this is the key to it, they have great young players who are only going to get better, like Bichette and like Vlad, although I don't know if Vlad can get much better than he did last year. But
no kidding.
He's the best player in the division, no question about that. And, I mean, Bichette's going to be a superstar, and not quite there yet, but clearly a star. On paper, this is the best team in that division, a very, very strong division. Not the strongest. The strongest division is your division, the NL West. Yeah. I don't think there's any question about that. But AL East, strong division. Toronto, I mean, Toronto's one of maybe two or three teams that's hitting like a normal team this year. Everybody else is like well below. You know, they're like, you know, almost half the teams are below 230 at this point. That's not good. But Toronto's hitting is so good. And so much better than just about everybody else's. So they're a clear favorite. Yankees, you know, now that I'm at the New York Post, I'm writing more about the Yankees and the Mets. I've already ripped their offense twice, and look at this, they're in tied for first place. So teaches me a lesson. They're not hitting, but they are tied for first. Their pitching has been incredible. Their bullpen amazing. They're doing it out Britain. King is striking everybody out of the bullpen. Cole's back on his game. You know, it's not a typical Yankee Bronx Bomber team, but it's still a really good team.
Listen, I think and this is going on across the league, this is specifically going on here in San Diego as well. What we're seeing is you can win games and not be a consistently hitting team. If you pitch and you play defense, you're going to be in any game. Yep. In the game of baseball, if the game is close, anything in it happened late. And I think that's what you're seeing, not just with the Yankees, not just with the Padres, but really across the league. Teams are pitching, and they're playing defense. There's been an emphasis on that, it seems like, around the league. And, we'll see how it shakes out. It's early, 17 games in. We'll see where this thing shake out. Let's move to the AL Central, where, surprisingly, the Minnesota Twins are at the top of the division. The White Sox seem to have – and then, by the way, they're at the top of the division with an 8-8 record. So nobody's winning a whole bunch of games there. Nobody has 10 wins in that division. Eight is the leader. And you look around that division, John, and the White Sox, they can't seem to get healthy. And you can see that there's some frustration with that lack of health kind of permeating through that team.
Absolutely. I mean, the Twins, very interesting team. You know, some people thought they spun their wheels and did a bunch of stuff and stayed the same. I liked what they did in the winter. I mean, obviously getting Correa, that's a big lift for the team. Buxton, at this point, he's tied for the major league lead with 6 home runs and playing only 10 games. I mean, it's kind of like Tatis last year where he led the league in home runs and missed a bunch of games. This guy has a .946 slugging. Next best is about 200 points lower than that. So, I mean, he's a superstar. You know, good for them. They're going to hang in there for him and Correa and some of the other offensive players that they've got. You know, I think we I was on here a couple weeks ago, and we talked about how the White Sox are maybe the most prohibitive favorite in their division. A lot has gone wrong. I mean, right now, you know, they're on as we do this, they're on a 7-game losing streak. But more than that, it's the injuries. They're just piling up to see Jimenez going out again, which is probably going to be for 2 months or so with that hamstring. You've got Robert with an injury. You have Lance Lynn out. You've got Moncada's missed games. Giolito's just back. Crochet out for the year. I mean, I don't know. This team is snake bit. Something's gone on. And, you know, at this point, I'm sure they're concerned big time that it's not going to come to fruition that they win that division, which is hard to believe. 10% of the way into the season, you know, I mean, to me, they did look like an obvious choice in that division. And at this point, it's a lot of mystery in that division. We don't know what's going to happen. Feels like almost anybody can win. But again, we got 90% of the season to go. The White Sox are going to get these players back, and you know, let's not be surprised if they do end up winning it.
Let's not be surprised, because you also have to remember the playoffs are expanded, so this could be something that helps them this year. And listen, the one thing that derails teams every year that have high expectation is injury. This is something you just can't account for, and that seems to be where the White Sox are. Buxton, I love the Correa sign for the Twins. He's not even playing that well yet. And when he gets going, I assume when it starts to get warmer, that team might be a team to watch in that division. Let's move to the AL West, where I don't think it's a surprise at all. The Mariners are at the top of that division. They're at 10-6, 8-2 in their last 10 games. I mean, my man Ty France is killing it over there.
That's your guy.
San Diego State Aztec for life. Having an incredible start to his season. It was funny. Yeah. I talked to him before we broke camp, and he was like one of the few offensive guys that I talked to that was like, man, I could use a few more spring training games. Everybody else was ready to go, and he's off to a great start with that Mariners team. And I think the surprise really behind them is the Angels. They've actually played well. They at least now, John, have two quality starting pitchers, right? Otani's pitched well. Syndergaard has pitched well. Now, Can they sustain that the whole season? I don't know. But, I mean, they go from having nothing in the pitching department, it seemingly, and now all of a sudden, to go along with a potent offense, you got at least two quality starters that could keep you in it.
Yeah, I'll say this. You were the first on the Ty France bandwagon. I don't know whether that was a year ago, 2 years ago. I'm like, who is this guy he's talking about? And you knew. I mean, the guy's a fantastic hitter. He's been one of the best in the league so far this year. Seattle, we can't really be surprised. I mean, they were pretty good last year. I thought they overachieved to some degree. But, I mean, you've added Ray. You've added Winker. These guys are maturing now. They obviously have a good team. There'll be no excuse if they don't make the playoffs this year. So not overly surprised by their good start. I'm a little surprised that Houston's not there. They were my AL pick again. Of course, I like to go with the chalk because, I do not like to be wrong. Because everybody tells me on Twitter when I'm wrong. So I thought Houston would be the team, but we'll see. They're off to a slow start. Angels, I mean, you know, they could go either way. They have two, arguably the two best players in the game, and Trout and Otani. You've got Rendon, who's playing now. I mean, he was not healthy the last year or two, and now he is healthy, so makes a big difference. Syndergaard obviously helps them. I thought they needed one more pitcher to really compete to the end, but, you know, we shall see with them. It's an interesting division. I'm still going to go with Houston winning it, Seattle making the playoffs. But, you know, I got to be honest, I watch the Angels every night. I watch the Yankees and the Mets because I'm at the post now. But, you know, if I have a choice, I'm often watching those West Coast teams, San Diego, L.A. I like San Francisco, but the team I watch the most is the Angels. You know, you've got Trout and you've got Otani. It's really hard to take your eye off of them.
I'll tell you what, in regards to Houston, you have to start to wonder, like, it seems like every year they lose a big piece, right? It started with Springer, then it was Cole. Now you lose Correa in that. I mean, a team can only sustain those type of losses for so long and replace them with young guys who have some growing to do. And I think that's kind of what you're seeing there. They're going to be reliant on their pitching, right? Frambers, Valdez has to pitch well. Obviously, Verlander looks great in his return so far. Ukwaiti has to be another guy that has to pitch well. And if those guys aren't doing that, they may run into some problems. Luis Garcia is another guy who they expect to pitch well. And they're going to have to hold the fort down until the young guys start to kind of, you know, feel their way through it and are in a place where they can be contributing members on a team that has high expectations.
Yeah, sure. Let me say this about Houston. They're my home team for spring training, and I see them a lot. This guy, Jeremy Pena, I know, you know, obviously Correa is one of the best players in the game. I saw him hit a ball, I don't know, it was 500 feet, something like that in spring training. It was immense in spring training. And defensively, he's really good. And if you go back and look at his record, he's been basically a 290 hitter at the minor league level. I know those players were very sad to see Correa go. They love him. But, you know, I think they've replaced him well just in-house. It was a little weird that Houston never upped its offer from that $160 million for five, I think it was 5 years, that we all made fun of, that it was never going to be anything close. You know, as it turned out, he ended up signing a three-year deal for more money per year with opt-outs. So he probably got a better deal, but, you know, they never upped their offer. And it's probably because they have faith in this kid, Pena. And I do believe in their young pitchers. Fromber, I think, is going to be a star. Verlander is obviously who he is, still amazing. I saw him in spring training. He talked about maybe pitching until he's 45. We shall see. But he wasn't sure yet. He's not committing, but I wouldn't put it past him. And, you know, McCullers isn't there yet, but he should be back in a couple months. And, you know, I still like Houston to win that division.
Yeah, it's easy to see why you like him. How about the Pena kid, the pride of the University of Maine? All right, let's move to the National League East. And listen, finally, it seems like the Mets are ready to step into the light and you know, live up to the expectation that has been bestowed upon them over the last few years. They're 12-5, best record in the league, most wins in the league. It's not all that much of a surprise, though.
No, I mean, they spent the most, and right now their payroll is right up there with the Dodgers, and they have a team befitting that kind of a payroll, I do believe. You know, are they going to beat out the Braves? We'll see. Acuna's coming back soon, and I think the Braves just haven't gotten it together. It's difficult coming back after winning the World Series. I do believe there's something to that. Maybe the Mets take that division. To me, they're clearly going to be a playoff team. I mean, without DeGrom, they've had the best starting pitching already. This guy, Tylor Megill, I mean, they put him in to start in place of DeGrom for the opening day, and it turned out to be exactly the right move. The guy's been fantastic, and obviously they got a lot of good players, and, you know, the Mets are for real. I don't know that they're going to hold off the Braves, but, you know, I'm going to be shocked if they're not a playoff team.
They're definitely for real. Megill has been super impressive. Carlos Carrasco has been impressive, and they're really doing this without their best player. Jacob DeGrom hasn't thrown an inning for this team yet. And so you can be assured if he's able to come back, and it sounds like they expect him to at some point, this team is only going to get better. Because they're, especially if Megill and Carrasco continue to pitch the way they have, it's going to be tough sled for anybody in that division, including the Braves, who I saw for four games. And they didn't look bad by any means. They look like a team that eventually will get it going. They have some terrific, terrific young starting pitching, whether it's Ian Anderson, whether it's Kyle Wright or the young kid Elder. I like their staff. And you just have to think that eventually, I mean, Olsen hasn't stopped hitting since he became a Brave. You got Ozuna back in the lineup. He's looked good. When the energy comes back, and that energy I'm talking about is Acuna, that team I expect to get it going. But they have stumbled out the blocks as well as the Phillies. We saw the Phillies in last night's game go down to the Brewers. They seem to be having a hard time stepping up to the expectations that's been put at their feet.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to out-hit a lot of their mistakes. Their bullpen's still, I think, a question mark. Their defense is not good. I do expect them to be, and they're always around 500. I do expect them to be better this year just because of their offense. I mean, at this point, basically Toronto's hitting. I think the Cubs are hitting. There aren't many teams that are really hitting it to this point, but once they get hitting, they're going to be a threat. Now, I think they have some flaws, And in that division, it's going to be tough. And, you know, I'm with you on Atlanta. Those young pitchers, and Kyle Wright is now stepping up to become the star that they expect him to be, it looks like. You got him with Anderson and Freed, and you get, hopefully Soroka comes back at some point. I mean, it's been so unfortunate that they've missed him, but, I mean, he was supposed to be the best of the lot. You know, and let's not forget, they were a 500 team more than halfway into the season last year. So count them out. No matter where they are in the standings in April, it shouldn't matter.
They caught fire for sure. Let's move to the NL Central. And really, it's the same two teams we seemingly are talking about every year, right? The Cardinals and the Brewers. Brewers at 10-6, Cardinals at 9-5. I like the Brewers team. I love the Cardinals team. I think they have the best outfield in baseball, defensively and offensively combined. That those guys can cover some ground, and I think O'Neill. And specifically, Bader has kind of started to figure it out offensively. And listen, I like the story of Albert returning back to St. Louis where it all started. He gets to be a DH. He's off to a decent start this year so far. But the Brewers are a team. I like their signings too. I mean, to be able to bring a guy in like McCutchen, I think is huge. I mean, they've needed a little bit of outfield help. They're not completely healthy yet at this point either, but Yelich is seemingly healthy, playing well. This is going to be, I think, the two teams that are fighting for the National League Central.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Obviously, those are the two best teams. I had Milwaukee winning at St. Louis as a wild card. I'm with you on their outfield. I really should defer to you completely on the outfield situation since you were an major league outfielder. I will say I did hear from a scout they have the best defensive outfielder. You hit it up there, it's going to be caught. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, overall, it might be the best. You might be onto something there. I know nobody's saying that other than you, but I think you might be right since they are the best defensively. It's the best defensive team in baseball. The reason I went with Milwaukee was that starting pitching. And Lauer with 13 strikeouts. I mean, he's their, fourth or fifth starter. You obviously have three great ones in Milwaukee. That's why I think they're going to win a lot of close, low scoring games. I think what looks like a pitching year may play into their hands even more. And, you know, obviously having Hader, who's probably the best closer in the game and a very good bullpen. That's why I kind of gave them the edge. But obviously St. Louis, a terrific team. Arenado's off to a big start. I mean, Goldschmidt hasn't gotten going yet, but we know how good he is. You got Hicks in the rotation now, which looks like that was a good move, which we shall see. But those are two very, very good teams in an otherwise kind of, you know, transitional division, shall we say. I'm being kind. And the Cubs, they've had their moments. You know, they beat up on the Pirates 21-0 the other day. And Pittsburgh is, 500 at this point? I mean, to me, that's one of the most shocking.
Who would have thought, right?
Not me. And, I mean, the run differential is a negative 27 or negative 28. But, you are your record, as Bill Parcells said. And I think that's fair to say. So at the moment, they are their record. But by the end, we expect their record to be not 500.
Shout out to the Reds, who were able to snap their 11-game losing streak. How about this? How about this stat? We pulled this up in our broadcast the other day. 99 consecutive innings without either having a tie or a lead. They finally snapped 99 innings. They did not have a lead or tie until they snapped that in the first inning in yesterday's game. So shout out to them. All right, let's move to the NL West, which is definitely the most competitive league, a division, I should say, in baseball. The Dodgers sit atop of it at 11-4, Giants at 11-5, Colorado, who probably is the biggest surprise ahead of Pittsburgh at 10-5, Padres at 10-7, and then – of course, you have the Diamondbacks at 6-10. Dodgers, I mean, listen, I seem like we talk about these guys every year, and just because they're good every year. They are, once again, really good. Freddie Freeman has seemingly found his comfort very early, much like Olsen has in Atlanta. So I think the Dodgers are very happy with that. Offensively, they look good. I mean, they've been able – the thing that I think helps them – to continue to be the team that they are this year is the designated hitter. They've been able to toggle Justin Turner and Max Muncy They did it all series against the Padres. One played third, one played DH, and they would flip-flop. At the top of the lineup, Mookie Betts, who hadn't been going, he had two home runs in the Padres series, so he seemingly is on his way. But Dodgers are who we always thought they were, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they're an all-star team. Seven guys in their starting lineup have been all-stars, and one of them is Will Smith, and I'm sure he's going to be an all-star very soon, one of the best two or three catchers in the game. Just a terrific team top to bottom. They do things right. They were smart to, as you say, toggle the players back and forth in the DH spot. I know there were rumors they were in on Nelson Cruz, but they wanted to have that DH spot for Turner and Muncy and some of their other players, and that's probably the appropriate thing to do for them. Obviously, Freeman was a great get at 162 for six, which was a good deal. It's a lot of money, but it's a good deal. And I'll bring this up now. You may not remember this, but we had a debate probably 2 years ago now about who was the second best player in baseball. Our best was obviously Mike Trout at that point. I still probably would go with Trout today. But yes, you said Mookie Betts, and I said Bellinger, and boy, did you look right. And that's why I didn't bring it up for 2 years. But at this moment, at this very point in time, today I can bring that up. I left that out, was hoping you would forget that you said Mookie Betts and I said Bellinger. Cody Bellinger was the second best player. But today I'll bring it up. I'll probably have to forget it tomorrow, but I forget it. Either way, they're both terrific talents, athletes, incredible. I have to really, to be honest, I mean, Mookie Betts, we have to say you were correct. Mookie Betts was the second best player, not Bellinger, who's had some moments in the last year and a half, but he's had too many struggles. Looks like he's back on his game. If you've got a former MVP batting seventh, who's still only 26 years old, it's almost unfair.
He seems like he's in a better place from a mechanic standpoint, hitting this year than he's been the last couple of years. But the tough part with Cody is he changes so much. Like, you see him 1 week, he looks a certain way. You see him the next week, he looks another way. He certainly had it going against the Padres, two homers in yesterday's game. Mookie is notoriously slow starter. You look at his career numbers, each month the numbers get better. And he's doing his best work by September and October, which is kind of when you want your guy to be doing his best work. But let's talk about the Giants a little bit. They've a lot of people expected them. I think everybody thought that they overachieved last year. They were a really good team, but 100-plus win was 107? Is that what wins they had?
Yep.
107 wins. I don't think anybody thought they were that good. And a lot of people thought they would kind of come back down to earth. They seemingly have picked up right where they left off. They're a half a game behind the Dodgers, although they are bristling some of these teams across the league with some of the way they are, their style of play, if you will. But they don't seem to care. They go out, they play a certain type of base. It's a unique type of baseball in terms of matching up and finding the best opportunities for their guys to play well. But they've continued being the same team they were last year, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm going to praise and defend the Giants. I mean, they're amazing. They really are. They lost Buster Posey to retirement, their best all-around player.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Their best pitcher, Gausman, they lost him to free agency. They just keep on keeping on. They are an amazing team. They did a great job in the winter. I still didn't quite believe it. I went with the Padres to make the playoffs. That was my final thing, is that the Giants or the Padres. NL's tough. There's really eight good teams, really good teams in the NL.
A lot more teams trying in the National League, it seems like.
It feels like that. I don't know. It feels like it. And you might be right, although the AL, they signed all those big shortstops, right? And yet NL, to me, feels like the better league. The NL West is the best division. And, I'm regretting it already. The Giants are amazing. And in their defense, I wasn't a ball player. You are. I know we look at things a little differently. I don't mind, no matter what the score is, if you're trying to win the game, bunting. I don't mind stealing. The one thing I didn't like was Nico Goodrum trying to break up Otani's no-hitter by bunting a perfect game.
Now, why is that any different? I don't understand. Why is that different?
I don't know. It's just, I don't like it. I didn't like it. I love Otani. I mean, I love the guy. I want to see a perfect game. to me, if the score is whatever the score is, they're all professional, not only professionals, they're all major leaguers. So I don't fault effort at any time except for that one case.
I think what's hard for people outside the game to understand is that, at least, you know, growing up in this game and playing it, you know, the 8 years mm-hmm. I did, the thing that's kind of an understanding, there's a brotherhood amongst the players. And, you know, when scores get out of hand and, you know, in this case, the Giants are keeping the gas pedal down, I think there's always been kind of an unsaid thing about, you know, taking care of other guys in terms of, you know, there's a guy on that mound who is ERA is going up and his job could be on the line in some meaningless runs that are coming across in his case. And I think there's always kind of been a sensitivity towards guys and their jobs and how this affects your opponent by, you know, in this case. And listen, the last one, the Nationals one wasn't, I didn't think, at least personally, was that big a deal. But, you know, I just think that's been something that guys who have been around this game have in the back of their mind. And Giants have made it clear that that's not a problem that they'll consider when it comes to winning ball games. And that's fine. I think, you know, it is within their right to play the game how they see as an organization. I'm just not sure that other teams are going to be as accepting of that. I don't know although on the outside, that is an accepted mind frame, I don't think it's quite accepted the same way within the game. Yes. So we'll see how it shakes out.
I think you're right. I think players, you were obviously a major league player for a long time. I saw Mark DeRosa on MLB Network. The players look at it differently, I think, than the fans and the writers. To me, again, you know, if I see it in a college game, like it's 48-0 or something like that, and there's 3 minutes to go, that I don't like. When someone's running up the score, that's not necessary. Those are amateurs, even though they're making a lot of money for the university. And personally, I think they should be professionals. I think they should be paid, but they're not. They're amateurs. And, you know, many of them are not, most of them, the vast majority of them are not going to be NFL players. I don't like that. To me, if you're at the Major League Baseball level, I don't mind it, except in that rare occasion, which I cited. And I understand your point that it's not any different, but I love Ohtani. I'm sorry. I wanted to see the program.
it's hard not to love Ohtani. All right, we talked about the Pirates being a surprise at 8-8, but my God, the Rockies, I just, during the offseason, when they signed Chris Bryant, I honestly did not understand what they were doing at all. But apparently, you know, they knew what they were doing because they sit here today, third in the division, the very tough National League West, at 10-5. What is going on in Colorado?
Well, I'm all for effort, no matter what. I know a lot of people question the Bryant. I'm, you know, in the games and outside the game, I don't like the tanking, and I don't think many people do. And I don't even like a lack of effort. You know, and I appreciate what the Rockies did. And they said, you know, we're in a tough division. I know our team doesn't look as good. We're going to try. And they paid Bryant a lot of money. Maybe they overpaid him. I don't know, but I'm not going to fault them for going all out and getting a very good player for that young team. And, you know, maybe that was the ingredient they needed. Do I think they'll make the playoffs? No, probably not. But at least they're giving their fans something to look at, some excitement, some interest. And I give them a lot of credit to be in that division and still be in the discussion. I'm all for it. I did think, and I think I was on with Cody, not you, a few weeks ago, and I said their pitching isn't that bad. They're not going to be a 100 loss team. I didn't give them this, what they're doing now, but their starting pitching is pretty solid, and they'll win more games than we think. I didn't expect this, but good for them.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing their effort. I applaud their effort, but it is a little bit perplexing when you just traded away Arenado and paid $50 million to get him off your roster.
That wasn't a good deal. That was not a good deal.
So I'm just confused. But I'm happy to see – I'm specifically happy for Buddy Black. He seems to always get the short end of the stick when it comes to rosters. And
nice.
He's doing well. Now, lastly, we'll talk about my Padres. They're right where they should be, I think, right now. Mm-hmm. You're still missing – Fernando Tatis Jr. Manny Machado has played like an MVP to start the season. Their pitching has been exceptional. I mean, Manaea had a tough night, a tough day yesterday, but prior to that, he's been money. Yu Darvish has been money. He pitched an excellent game against the Dodgers in game one of that series. Joe Musgrove has been phenomenal. Bullpen has been lights out. The only thing that they haven't done consistently is hit, and that is the only reason I think that they have seven losses. If they hit even a little bit, this team could be right there at the top of the division with the Dodgers. But they're where they should be, considering what they're missing right now. And that's they're also missing Clevinger too. So they haven't even got fully healthy yet.
Yeah, I mean, they're in a large group that really hasn't hit yet. I think it's probably fortunate that they didn't do the Hosmer trade. He's looking like one of the few guys who's actually hitting for them. So that's a plus. The reason I had them as a playoff team is I like their starting pitching depth. I still do. And, I thought Manaea just added to it. Once they get a full strength with Snell and Clevinger, I don't think there are too many teams that can match up that pitching. So I still like them. And they also added a great manager last year. I think they underachieved like no team in Major League Baseball. And that's not going to happen again. So NL's going to be really thrilling. That division is awfully good. I think the league is very good. But, to me, San Francisco looks like a playoff team. St. Louis, Milwaukee, San Diego, the Mets, the Atlanta. I mean, there's too many teams. So
there is too many.
You know, they could have gone to the seven or eight playoff teams, but now it's six, and it's going to be tight, and it's going to be tough.
It's going to be tight, and that element that the Major League Baseball added a few years ago, where everybody starts at the same time, that's going to be something to watch at the end of the season. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode of Big Time Baseball. You can catch us at Odyssey Sports. Download our podcast on any of the sites out there. And listen, we'll do this again next week. Until then, Tony Gwynn Jr., John Heyman, catch you next week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.